Well, good day, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Big, Big Panic Podcast. It's good to have you with us today on this Friday, the 18th of July in the year of our Lord, 2025. Well, I'll tell you what, the looks like the days of sunny, cloudless skies are over for Southwest Virginia. It was nice while it lasted longer than usual. We're back to our downpours in the afternoon, thunderstorms right and left and everywhere. But that's okay. It's still summertime. It's still hot. So that's all right. And it looks like the weather is going to clear up a little bit for next week. But every single day next week, they're calling for some rain in the afternoon. Pretty typical for around here. Hope it's nice where you are. Hope you had a good week. It's been a hard week for the Christian church, hasn't it? We lost one of the great pastors and Bible exegetes, John Mack. John MacArthur passed away earlier this week. I think he was, 84, something like that. And he's been in ill health for a while, and we've prayed, and excuse me, I dropped something. We've prayed and prayed and prayed for him to recover, and saw a video of him, when was it, two or three months ago, and he looked really bad. And I think a lot of us saw that video and knew that his days were numbered. But as we say, our loss is heaven's gain, because, John Mack is in the best place possible. We also lost a couple of people that we have been praying for in the church, a fellow by the name of Steve and a young lady by the name of Savannah, both passed. And again, two people that we've been praying for a while. And, God's ways are so hard to figure out sometimes. And just when you think you've got the Lord figured out, you realize you're like Job. You don't know anything at all. And we get very sad. We grieve. We miss the people that we love, the people that the Lord put in our lives for a time. And that's normal. That's a normal thing. But on the other hand, we need to have faith. We need to realize that that they really are in the best place possible. And Steve and Savannah and Pastor John are with the Lord, where they're not suffering anymore, no more cancer, no more pneumonia, no more no more bodies that are starting to wear out, just perfection in any way that you can think of. So we rejoice that they're with the Lord, but we can't help but be a little bit sad at the same time, because our lives are a little lonelier for their loss. Well, we're going to get into Revelation chapters 17 and 18 today. So you might want to pause the podcast and read those two chapters 17 and 18 of the book of Revelation. And hang on a second here. Sorry, someone's trying to call me, and it looks like a scam call. We're looking at the fall of Babylon, And I'll tell you what, it's not an understatement to say that how you view chapter 17 will more or less determine your interpretation of the book of Revelation. As you might imagine, there are many Bible scholars who have wildly differing views and opinions of Revelation chapters 17 and 18. For many, many years, the majority of exegetes have taught that Babylon, mentioned in the book of Revelation, represents the city of Rome. Yet, that now that we're in the 21st century, that interpretation seems to be a little bit inadequate. It's just not sufficient to identify Rome with Babylon. The details of John's description of this Babylon in the book of Revelation don't fit any city in the past, whether literal Babylon or Sodom or Egypt, Rome, or even Jerusalem. So I would say that Babylon can't be confined to any one historical manifestation, whether in the past or in the future. I think that when we read about Babylon in the book of Revelation, it has multiple meanings or multiple equivalents. Let me use that word. Babylon, the word, particularly in the book of Revelation, is found wherever there is satanic deception. It's defined more by dominant idolatries, false religions and the occult and cults, than geographic or temporal boundaries. The ancient Babylon, the Babylon of the Old Testament, I think is better understood here as the archetypal head of all entrenched worldly resistance to God. Eschatological Babylon, the Babylon that we're talking about in Revelation of the future, I would say is a symbol of satanic deception and power. It's a divine mystery that can never be wholly understood or reduced to earthly institutions. I suppose that maybe the safest way to put this is that Babylon in Revelation represents the total culture, including religion, of the world apart from God. And Rome is simply one manifestation of the total system. So let's get into it here. Chapters 17 and 18 form one continuous unit. Really, it should be just one long chapter dealing with the judgment of this Babylon of the future. Babylon is described as a woman, a great city. And it's the fall of Babylon is described in chapter 18. These two chapters, chapters 17 and 18, form a kind of extended appendix to the seventh bowl judgment in chapter 16, verse 19. So let's get started here. Let's look at, excuse me, my allergies are waking up this morning. The destruction of what I call the religious or the cultural Babylon in Revelation chapter 17. Let's read the first couple of verses here. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came to me and said, "Come, and I will show you how the famous prostitute is to be punished, that great city that is built near many rivers. The kings of the earth practiced sexual immorality with her, and the people of the world became drunk from drinking the wine of her immorality." So the evil woman here symbolizes the culture and religion of Babylon, and the waters symbolize something that's mentioned in verse 15 of the same chapter. It says, "The angel also said to me, 'The waters you saw on which the prostitute sits are nations, peoples, races, and languages.'" So the nations of the world had committed adultery with this mysterious woman, meaning that they had taken on her culture and had become part of the religious system, which she symbolizes. Now let's take a look at verses 3-5. "The Spirit took control of me, and the angel carried me to a desert. There I saw a woman sitting on a red beast that had names insulting to God written all over it. The beast had seven heads and 10 horns. The woman was dressed in purple and scarlet, and covered with gold ornaments, precious stones, and pearls. In her hand she held a cup full of obscene and filthy things, the result of her immorality. On her forehead was written a name that has a secret meaning, Great Babylon, the mother of all prostitutes and perverts in the world." So in a vision, John's in a desert where he saw the woman Babylon herself. She was sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered in blasphemous names. The beast had seven heads and 10 horns. The beast here is an obvious reference to the world government, the government of the Antichrist, back in chapter 13. The 10 horns are explained a little bit later in verse 12. The 10 horns you saw are 10 kings who have not yet begun to rule, but who will be given authority to rule as kings for 1 hour with the beast. So the seven heads seem to refer to prominent rulers of the yet future Roman Empire. The woman is seen wearing purple and scarlet, sitting with gold, precious stones, and pearls. Her adornment is similar to that of religious trappings of ritualistic churches today. While purple, scarlet, gold, precious stones, and pearls can all represent beauty of true faith, here they represent a false religion that prostitutes and distorts the truth. In her hand, the woman is seen holding a cup of gold that is filled with abominable things and the filth of her adulteries. This seems to confirm previous indications that her character and life are symbolic of a perverse, degraded culture and false religion. It seemed to be confirmed by words written on her forehead. On her forehead was written a name that has a secret meaning: Great Babylon, the mother of all prostitutes and perverts in the world. You know, the Bible is chock full of information about Babylon as a source of false religion and cults and the occult. The record beginning with the building of the Tower of Babel back in Genesis chapter 10. The name Babel suggests confusion. Later on, that name was applied to the city of Babylon, which itself has a long history dating back to at least 3,000 years before Christ. One of its famous rulers was Hammurabi. You probably heard of him. He's famous for something called the Code of Hammurabi. But after a period of decline, Babylon rose to great heights under Nebuchadnezzar some 600 years before Christ. His reign and the subsequent history of Babylon really serves as the kind of like the background of the book of Daniel. So Babylon was important not only politically, but also religiously and culturally. Nimrod, who founded Babylon back in Genesis chapter 10, had a wife known as Semiramis, who founded the secret religions, the occultic rites of the Babylonian mysteries, according to accounts outside of the Bible. Semiramis had a son by the name of Tammuz, and in effect was a what we would call a false fulfillment of the promise of the seed of the woman given to Eve. Various religious practices were observed in connection with this false Babylonian religion, including recognition of the mother and child of God and of creating an order of virgins who became religious prostitutes. You see that carrying on into the New Testament. Tammuz, according to myth, was killed by a wild animal and then restored miraculously back to life. A satanic anticipation and counterfeit of Christ's resurrection. Scripture repeatedly condemns the false religion of Babylon, particularly, most notably, in Jeremiah chapters 7 and 44 and Ezekiel chapter 8. The worship of Baal, as a matter of fact, is related to the worship of Tammuz. So you can see how the tentacles of the Babylonian cult spread throughout the ancient Near East. After the Persians took over Babylon in 539 BC, they discouraged the continuation of the mystery religions of Babylon. And subsequently, the Babylonian cultists moved away to Pergamum. Yeah, Pergamum, one of the seven churches of Asia Minor, mentioned in the early chapters of the book of Revelation. And eventually, the teachers of the Babylonian mystery religions would move from Pergamum to Rome. And they were very influential in paganizing Christianity and were the source of so many so-called religious rites which have crept into even our modern ritualistic churches. So Babylon then is the symbol of apostasy and blasphemous substitution of idol worship for the worship of God in Christ. So in this passage in the book of Revelation, Babylon comes to its final judgment. All right, let's take a look at verse 6. And I saw that the woman was drunk with the blood of God's people and the blood of those who were killed because they had been loyal to Jesus. So the woman, symbolizing the apostate religious system and culture, is drunk with the blood of the saints. This makes it clear that the apostate religious system of the first half of the tribulation will be completely devoid of any true Christians. As a matter of fact, the apostate church will attempt to kill all those who follow the true faith. Verses 7 and 8. When I saw her, I was completely amazed. Why are you amazed? The angel asked me. I will tell you the secret meaning of the woman and of the beast that carries her. The beast with seven heads and ten horns. That beast was once alive, but lives no longer. It is about to come up from the abyss and will go off to be destroyed. The people living on earth, whose names have not been written before the creation of the world in the book of the living, will be amazed as they look at the beast. It was once alive. Now it no longer lives, but it will reappear. So here the angel's explanation of the woman and the beast she was riding. And the beast, he said, will come up out of the abyss, the home of Satan, and the place from which the demons come. This indicates that the power behind the ruler is satanic, and that Satan and the man he controls are closely identified. Their power is one. The fact that the beast was once alive, but lives no longer, and will come up from the abyss in the future, is an indication of something that happened back in Revelation chapter 13, verse 3. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have been fatally wounded, but the wound was healed. The whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. That's right. The supernatural survival and revival of both the world ruler and his empire will impress the whole world as being supernatural and will lead to the worship of the beast and Satan. Verses 9 to 11, this calls for wisdom and understanding. The seven heads are seven hills on which the woman sits. There are also seven kings. Five of them have fallen, one still rules, and the other one is not yet come. When he comes, he must rule only a little while. And the beast that once was alive but lives no longer is itself an eighth king who is one of the seven and is going off to be destroyed. So the angel tells John that wisdom and understanding were needed to understand the truth being presented here symbolically. The angel informed John that the beast's seven heads are seven hills on which the woman sits. Now, a lot of ancient writers identified the seven hills to be Rome, often described as the city of seven hills. And this has led to the conclusion that this passage teaches that Rome will be the capital of the coming world empire, the Antichrist's kingdom. But if you read the passage carefully, that's not what it's saying at all. Modern scholarship offers extensive evidence that the seven hills refer to seven rulers, not mountains. This is supported by the very next sentence, they are also seven kings. If the mountains represent kings, then obviously they're not literal mountains and don't have anything to do with Rome. And this is supported by verse 10. Five of them have fallen, one still rules, and one has not yet come. When he comes, he must rule only for a little while. So John was writing from his point of view, in which five prominent kings of the Roman Empire had already come and gone. One of them was on the throne in his day, probably Domitian, who caused the persecution which put John on the island of Patmos. The identity of the seventh king, the one to come after John's time, is not known. Verse 11 says, "And the beast that was once alive but lives no longer is itself an eighth king, who is one of the seven and is going off to be destroyed." So the eighth king is obviously identical with the Antichrist, the final world ruler, the man who heads up the final world empire to be destroyed by Christ at his return. Now, one possible explanation of the difference between the seventh and eighth beast is that the seventh beast itself is the Roman Empire to be revived during the end time, and the eighth beast is its final ruler. So these verses show that in the end time, particularly during the first part of the tribulation, there will be some kind of alliance between the Middle East ruler, the Antichrist, and the apostate world church at that time. This will all come to a head at the midpoint of the tribulation, when that political power becomes power and influence, let me put it that way, becomes worldwide. Now, in verses 12 to 18, we read about the horns. The horns of the beast are also interpreted by the angel. The horns of the beast are 10 kings and their kingdoms not yet in existence. But they will arise at the same time or with the same satanic empowerment as the beast. So these 10 kingdoms of the future will be united as one in purpose with the beast and will make war against Christ, the Lamb. The angel assured John that the Lamb has complete sovereign power and he will be victorious. And all of his followers will share in that great victory. The interpretation is very similar to Daniel's night vision of the Son of Man. Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. "During this vision in the night, I saw what looked like a human being. He was approaching me, surrounded by clouds, and he went to the one who had been living forever and was presented to him. He was given authority, honor, and royal power so that the people of all nations, races, and languages would serve him. His authority would last forever, and his kingdom would never end." Now, it's impossible to predict where and when these 10 kingdoms or nations in the future will come on the scene in world history. Most scholars favor the nations in a revived Rome, that is to say, like Europe. But they will come from anywhere in the Mediterranean area or even in the Middle East. In verses 15 to 18, we read about this satanic civil war. Let's read those verses. "The angel also said to me, 'The waters you saw on which the prostitute sits are nations, peoples, races, and languages. The 10 horns you saw and the beast will hate the prostitute.'" That's surprising, isn't it? "They will take away everything she has and will leave her naked. They will eat her flesh and destroy her with fire, for God has placed in their hearts the will to carry out his purpose by acting together and giving to the beast their power to rule until God's words come true. The woman you saw is the great city that rules over the kings of the earth. Satanic Civil War. Interesting, isn't it? The beast and the 10 horns, or the 10 kings of the future, or the 10 nations of the future, will rebel and destroy the position and power of the great prostitute. And all of this happens according to God's plan. For God has placed in their hearts the will to carry out his purpose by acting together. Everything that we see happening is according to God's will. And in chapter 18, there's this a further revelation of the destruction of this Babylon of the future. So chapter 17 is the destruction of the religious and cultural Babylon. And in chapter 18, we're reading about the judgment on the political and commercial side of Babylon. So Babylon, the city, is doomed and will become the home to demons, we are told. The cause of its corruption and seduction in leading the world away from God and its treatment of God's people. So Babylon has been around for thousands of years. If we're assuming that Babylon existed even before 3,000 years before Christ, and we're now 2,000 years after Christ. So Babylon, as a city throughout the Old Testament era, and as a religious, cultural, political, and commercial influence, I mean, that's been in existence for over 5,000 years. Like, we can't imagine how powerful the influence of that one city was. The influence of ancient Babylon is felt down to this very day. No wonder God is going to judge it. Another angelic voice in chapter 18 warns God's people to get out of the doomed city. God will take care of his own in the worst part of the Great Tribulation. Some will be martyred, but some will escape and some will live. Now, I hope that you'll pause and read chapter 18. We don't have time. We're 27 and a half minutes past the hour. Read chapter 18 in its totality. Now, verses 9 to 24. This whole section records a series of laments by the kings of the earth, merchants and seafarers. More and more, the economic system of the world in the future will come apart at the seams. You know, commerce, banking, computers have tied nations and businesses together for many, many, many decades. Fewer and fewer individual companies will be left in the future. When the great consolidation takes place, a total economic stranglehold will occur. There'll be no buying or selling without the mark, we are told. When the center of this economic system is destroyed, and it will be, everyone in it will be left in a state of complete and utter chaos. That's what's going on earth. Meanwhile, a great outburst of praise will take place in heaven. Saints, apostles, and prophets all join together in joy that God has judged the great prostitute and that the return of Christ is at hand. God's justice will be demonstrated in the punishment of those who persecuted God's people and filled the earth with their blood. Now, as I say, and we'll wrap all this study up for today, you know, people love to debate what city John is talking about. As I hinted at earlier in the study, a common view, even today, is that it refers to Rome because of the prominence of Rome as the seat of the Roman Catholic Church and the capital of the ancient Roman Empire. That seems highly unlikely to me. You know, granted, at one time in world history and in church history, the Roman Catholic Church wielded great power and influence. It doesn't wield that power anymore. But other evidence seems to point to the fact that there will be a Babylon in the future, located on the Euphrates River, which in the end time will be converted into a ship-bearing river. You know, when all the evidence is studied, the conclusion seems to point to Babylon being rebuilt as the capital of the final world empire during the end days, rather than Rome, Italy. But Bible scholars are in no way united in this thought. It's possible that Babylon will be a city that is in existence today, but named something else, will be renamed Babylon in the future. You know, we're reading about things, prophecies yet to be fulfilled, and we're always on tricky ground saying that we know exactly what prophecy is all about, because we really don't. We're making very educated guesses. So to wrap up the study, Babylon in the future refers to a religious, a cultural, an economic, and a political system that dominates the world and will dominate the world of the future. It also probably refers to a literal city, not in existence yet, named Babylon. As I say, that city will be built, or a present-day city will be renamed Babylon in the future, but it doesn't stand the chance of any kind of survival. All right, it is almost 32 minutes past the hour. We'll wrap this up for today, and we'll pick up our study in Revelation chapter 19, Lord willing, next Friday. We're getting close to the end of Revelation. In the meantime, we'll see you back here on Monday. We're going to continue our series of hope, or on hope. And don't forget to go to church on Sunday. It's going to be kind of a wet weekend here in Wise, Virginia, Wise County, Virginia. But I don't know what it'll be like where you are. But whatever you're doing, make it a great, great weekend. But do go to church on Sunday. It is the very least that you can do in your relationship with God. God bless you. Thank you for listening to the Panic Podcast Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We'll see you next week.